Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Patent Denial and New Evidence Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On April 18, 2012, the Supreme Court announced its decision in Kepos v. Hyatt. This case involves the Patent Act of 1952, under which an applicant who is denied a patent by the Patent and Trademark Office is permitted to challenge that decision by filing a lawsuit in federal court. The question here concerns the extent to which an applicant can introduce in federal court evidence that was not presented to the Patent and Trademark Office, and the standard that the court should apply in considering such evidence. In an opinion delivered by Justice Thomas, the court held unanimously that when introducing new evidence in federal court, an applicant is not subject to limits beyond those set forth in the Federal Rules of Evidence and of Civil Procedure. The court further held that if such evidence pertains to disputed issues of fact, it should be assessed by the federal trial court under a de novo standard of review. Justice Sotomayor filed a concurring opinion in which Justice Breyer joined. To discuss the case, we have David Olson, who is an assistant professor at Boston College Law School. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Olson.
Hello, I'm David Olson, assistant professor of law at Boston College Law School. Today I'm going to talk about the recent case of Kepos v. Hyatt, a patent law case in which the court decided two issues. The first issue was whether a patent applicant whose patent application has been denied by the Patent and Trademark Office, or PTO, whether that applicant can introduce new evidence when he avails himself of the right to challenge the rejection of his application in a civil action in a district court. The court answered this question with a yes, saying that new evidence can indeed be introduced in district court actions according to the rules of federal evidence and civil procedure. The second question the court addressed was what standard of review should apply to new evidence introduced in these civil actions. Here the court held that the standard should be de novo and that deferential standard of review for the agency's decision shouldn't apply when dealing with new evidence. That's the two holdings in a nutshell. Let me now give some background to the case and then discuss the holdings in a bit more detail. When inventors receive patents, they do so by filing patent applications with the Patent Office. These applications are then examined for patentability by patent examiners. If the patent is deemed to be novel, non-obvious, meet written description, enablement requirements, and some other requirements, then the patent is granted. If, however, the Patent Office rejects the patent, then the applicant has a couple of options. First, the applicant may appeal within the Patent Office. If this is unsuccessful, the applicant may then either under Section 141 of the Patent Act appeal directly to the Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit, or under Section 145 of the Patent Act, the applicant may appeal to the United States District Court. Under the old patent law, it was the Court for the District of Columbia. Under the new American Invents Act, just passed last September, civil actions will now be filed in district court in the Eastern District of Virginia.
In the case at bar, Gilbert Hyatt filed a patent application in 1995 that, as amended, contained 117 claims. The PTO's patent examiner denied each of the claims for lack of an adequate written description. Eventually, after some back and forth, 38 of the claims were allowed, but the rest were denied. Hyatt then appealed that within the Patent Office, and the decision continued to deny many of his claims. Hyatt then availed himself of a Section 145 action and filed suit in the Federal District Court against the director and PTO. During that proceeding, Hyatt wanted to offer some new evidence, in point of fact, a written declaration to the district court. In that declaration, Hyatt himself identified portions of the patent specification that he thought supported the claims that the board held were not patentable. The district court refused to look at this declaration, holding that the applicant was precluded from presenting new issues, at least in the absence of some reason of justice put forward for failure to present the issue at the Patent Office. Hyatt then appealed to the Federal Circuit. A divided panel affirmed the district court. The Federal Circuit then took the case en banc, and the en banc Federal Circuit reversed the district court and held that Congress intended that applicants would be free to introduce new evidence in Section 145 proceedings, subject only to the rules applicable to all civil actions, the Federal Rules of Evidence, and the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure. This is the judgment that the Supreme Court then affirmed completely in a 9-0 decision. In ruling that new evidence may be admitted and that it must be considered de novo, the Supreme Court first started with the text of statute section 145. It notes that that section grants a patent applicant who's been denied a patent on any of his claims, quote, a remedy by civil action against the director, end quote. And the section goes on to explain that district court may adjudge that such applicant is entitled to receive a patent for his invention as specified in any of his claims involved in the decision, as the facts in the case may appear, and such adjudication shall authorize the director to issue such patent on compliance with the requirements of law. The court, in looking at that text, noted that none of the text imposes any unique evidentiary limits on the district court, and it doesn't establish a heightened standard of review for factual findings by the PTO. The court also rejected the patent office's contention that background principles of administrative law should lead to a different result. The court held that the traditional rule that a party has to exhaust administrative remedies did not come into play here, both based on the statute's text itself and because the proceeding would be complete and final by the time the court was going to review the decision. And moreover, that because Section 145 explicitly allows this separate civil action that is not just a review of an administrative procedure, that this allows for new evidence to be entered into the record, and this new evidence has to be reviewed then de novo. The court also briefly reviewed the law under the 1836 Patent Act and 1870 Acts and its precedent under both of these statutes, and it determined that its precedent was consistent with its position in this case, considering that the text has not changed that much in the types of review that are available via district courts to denials of patent grants. Thus, at the end of the day, the Supreme Court agreed with the Federal Circuit that Congress intended under Section 145 proceedings that a district court may consider all competent evidence adduced, and that the Congress intended that applicants would be free to introduce new evidence in Section 145 proceedings subject only to the rules applicable to all civil actions, which are the Federal Rules of Evidence and the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure. The court then went on to say that, as a logical matter, the district court can only make these determinations of new evidence and of their weight and probity under a de novo standard because it's the first tribunal to hear the evidence in question. The Patent Office had argued that allowing new evidence to be admitted and allowing it to be reviewed under a de novo standard would lead to a moral hazard, to wit, that it would encourage patent applicants to withhold evidence from the Patent Office intentionally with the goal of presenting that evidence for the first time to a non-expert judge. The Supreme Court did not find that a compelling argument and thought that the scenario was unlikely, that it would be unlikely that an applicant would want to undermine his or her chances before the PTO on a speculative chance of gaining some advantage in a 145 proceeding in presenting new evidence to a district court judge. In saying this, the court seems to have left open, as a proper approach on behalf of an applicant, that an applicant could do just that, could sandbag and hold back evidence in the hopes of using it with de novo review in a district court proceeding. The court seemed to find it unlikely, but did not say that it would be barred by Section 145. The court did say, however, that the district court may, in its discretion, consider the proceedings before and the findings of the Patent Office in deciding what weight to afford to an applicant's newly admitted evidence. So the court indicated through that there might be some level of deference under the equitable standard to the Patent Office in some determination of how much weight to give evidence based on the proceedings below, but refused to have any firm rules that would disallow, let's say, evidence that was held back below in the PTO proceeding and then presented for the first time to a district court. Justice Sotomayor wrote a brief concurring opinion. There she stressed that these 145 proceedings are equitable proceedings and that a district court should feel free to take into account the manner and method of introduction of the new evidence, and specifically whether the evidence was withheld purposely below, and feel free to exclude evidence in such a case. She cited the 1927 Third Circuit case of Barrett Co. v. Coppers Co., in which the Third Circuit did just that. It said that the patentee was estopped from introducing new evidence that had been purposely withheld from prior fact finders. So with that, she distinguished this from a situation in which a patent applicant doesn't introduce the evidence before the Patent Office from simple negligence, lack of foresight, or attorney error. A couple of interesting things to note about the case are, first, that the Supreme Court definitively rejected a standard that would have denied the introduction of new evidence for evidence that could have been presented before the Patent Office, so rejected the director's position on that. Secondly, the type of evidence that was introduced is a rather odd kind of evidence. What it was a declaration on behalf of the patentee and made by the patentee saying that in this case, you should look here at the specification of the patent. This shows you where there's adequate written description of the patent. Written description, of course, in patent law is a requirement that the specification, the write-up of the patent, adequately discloses, describes, and cabins the breadth and the nature of the patented invention. So the patent office and courts will reject patent claims when they do not have adequate written description of the specification. This particularly comes into play when patentees add continuation patents or continuation claims where they come back perhaps years later, they've kept a patent going in a continuation proceeding, and years later they might write claims that could, for instance, cover the products that are out on the market from their competitors. Courts tend to look askance at such use of continuations, and so therefore to insist that the original patent specification had an adequate written description of the invention to support these later claims. Here, there's no new evidence about what was invented when or by whom. Instead, we have something that in this affidavit might seem a lot like argument, but the Supreme Court held here that it's allowed, that a district court should look at it under the principles of equity, and in fact that it gets de novo review. So there is no deference given to the Patent Office's kind of determinations of the weight of the evidence or even argumentation below. Or at least there's a chance for a patentee to argue that this new declaration should be treated anew and there shouldn't be weight against it from the proceedings in the Patent Office. Now, both the majority and the concurrences statements that the using principles of equity, the district court should feel free to determine what weight is appropriate, maybe weighs against that somewhat, but one has to wonder whether we might see some strategic patent applicants going forward choosing to introduce all sorts of evidence they think will be helpful to their granting of their claims in the patent office, but perhaps not have the patentee make a declaration so that that can be saved for later in a district court. Or really, what's to stop a patentee from making a declaration before the patent office, and then later, before the district court in a 145 proceeding, making a second declaration, since there's no bar to evidence that could have been presented before the PTO. It'll be interesting to see how courts interpret this going forward and what sorts of weight they will give to declarations entered in such proceedings. I'm David Olson from Boston College Law School. I hope you've found this summary of the Kappos v. Hyatt case useful. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.